Hi, I'm Kelsey Ramsden. I'm going to do two things. I'm going to start with a story, a bit about myself, and then I'm going to do something that I call five ways too. And so it may not be what you're expecting in terms of like driving sales, because my industries have been really like, you know, vast and deep. And so it's different for everyone's business. So what I wanted to do today, knowing that the room would be diverse and there'd be some, you know, online people and some tangible people and all that, was to give you a little bit of something that hopefully will work for everyone. So this is me and this is my story and where it begins. And I really encourage you, I guess, to listen along, obviously, I'm hoping, but secondarily, to think about your place in this. So if you were asking these questions of yourself, I think you'll get a lot more out of it. So this picture that I drew when I was six, and this is my little redheaded annoying brother who just had his first baby last night, and I'm so stoked. I know, it's all the mamas. And then this is me and my mom and dad. And there's something about this picture that I think everyone will note. I drew this picture for my mom's, like, a Mother's Day gift. And at this time, I went to daycare a couple of days a week, and I produced this picture to my daycare lady, Auntie Flo, God bless you. And she gave it back to me and said, "This is wrong. You have to redo it." And my little heart broke. And I walked away about five steps, and then I thought, to hell with that. This is a great picture. It's very sunny. It's extra sunny, you know? That's what's so great about it. And so, yeah. So that was really the beginning of my entrepreneurial streak, was this kind of the notion of self that someone else might think what I'm doing isn't great. But it, so long as I think it's great, it's a start. And then I have to find the people who are great. And this is the beginning of a sales mentality. You know, I knew my market was my mother. And quite frankly, she would like anything. So, you know, so I also got to like it too. So this is me. I show this picture because I'd like to really elaborate on the notion of self. And so this first one, I have a home perm. And I don't know if you can tell, it's casting a shadow on the wall behind it. It's really strong photo. I also invented the mullet. And then the 90 degree mullet, the kind of side swiped mullet. And again, this was kind of the beginning of, I grew up in a family where, and in fact, I'll mention one side thing. When I was in this age 11 picture, my dad would no longer walk beside me at the mall, you know? So you have to have some haters, you know, like if you're doing something of value, there's going to be someone who says, "Oh my God, I'm not walking beside you at the mall." So, and it could be your dad. But the point of that being, you know, I was afforded the luxury of having a mom who just said, "Kelsey, you know what? So long as you're respectful of other people and you're good to yourself, then do your thing. Just don't go to jail." Like that was my mom's thing. And so I haven't been in jail of my own volition to date, so I'm doing quite well and I am being myself. So, but what this led me to do was to grow up in a way that that I allow myself to kind of take an exploratory look, my own lens, and see what I thought about things before I started to kind of simmer that down into what other people might think of things. And we'll get into some different stories about that, but what it led to is this. This is me building my first business, which was is a multi-million-dollar international construction company. So I build roads, bridges, dams, airports. If it has to do with moving the earth, I do that. And my husband may say the same. Sorry, I've been away for a week. I'm kind of there. But so this is a picture of me building my business, and this is what Chatelaine Magazine and Profit Magazine, this is what people make it look like, right? This is what building a business looks like. This is what the press makes it look like, you know? So I could stand up here looking like this, not smelling like diesel fuel and, you know, all these great things. And I think that's an important message to every entrepreneur. And I really don't care at what place you are. If you're at the part of your, like, when I started my business, I was $112,760 in debt. That was my number. And And so I think there's this notion of entrepreneurship where, and I've been on that side and up here, and we always think that someone's got it figured out. And I think if you ask anyone who is honest enough to tell you the truth, who's holding a microphone in one of these things, they'll tell you they're just figuring it out still. You know, there's a lot of stuff we know what works and we've done it, been there, done that, but everything moves so fast. There's always going to be something that you just have to try. You just have to trust. You just have to question. And so I can look like this and be on covers of magazines and flying around the world and speaking at global conferences, but there's still this part of me in every day of my business. And I always like to open up with that because, you know, people's CVs look like one thing. Your about page should be amazing, but there's also you at 2:14 in the morning when you're like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? And that 2:14 is my time. That's Eastern Standard Time. So if you're up at 2:14 and you send me an email, well, you know, if it's Eastern Standard Time, I will be looking. But yeah, so that's me. And I think to kind of frame the next part of the question, it's around setting our limits. And so there's a lot of talk about, you know, the sky is the limit and all that kind of thing, which is lovely. But I think, again, at 2:14 in the morning or whatever you're in the middle of the night time is, there's a limit. There's a limit to our capacity to take on things, to bear things on our own, to grow our businesses that we oftentimes put there ourselves. And I think sometimes it's just giving yourself the permission. So I would like to openly give you the permission for the next 30 minutes to don't set one. Because this is a picture that I drew. And sometime in grade 10, when I was paying attention in science class, someone said that suns are actually stars, and there's like a bazillion of them. And this occurred to me in an instant. I was like, oh my God, that picture that I drew could have had 100,000,000,000 of those suns. Who's to say? It's only what snippet of the piece you're looking at. You know, if you drill down, you're only focused at one little spot. That's when you set a limit. And it's really getting way out, far away from yourself and beyond that. The thing that all the people look at you and say, oh my God, you're such a great whatever. And you're going, oh, I'm not really, you know. And then you go home and doubt it and feel like you're just okay at that. But that thing is true, you know. So you have to stand back and look at yourself from this far away, I think, oftentimes, to be able to really get the message. So we're going to go through the how-tos. You're going to walk away with 5 how-tos. And like I said, they may not be exactly what you think. And some of the things that I say are not totally politically correct. So you may like, or you may be my dad and walking not beside me in the mall, or you may join me. So we'll see how it goes. But I think, that's part of the reason that I've been as successful as I have. And we're going to talk about that. So the first thing I want you to do is get your postcard out, because we're going to be using a little postcard. So don't write anything in the side where you would normally write your address. Well, I mean, ultimately, actually, let's do that. Just write your address in. Leave me room to put postage on it, though. I'm in Canada. So if you're in Australia, go down, you know, like on the page further on. So I have room. And then on the very top left, write your email address. And I'm going to just, again, disclaimer, I'm going to send you an email from which you can happily, you know, drop off that list. You will not join my big mailing list. This email is only specific to this exercise today. And if you don't hand your postcard in, I obviously will not get your email. So you're welcome to self-select out at the end of this. So it's all in good self-control places where we... Okay, yeah. That's great. So put your address on. Leave me room for postage. And then on the top left-hand side of the other side, put your email address. No, I don't need your name. It's going to be on the 2. I'm assuming you're mailing it to yourself. Yeah, so I got that. That's okay. Okay, so whenever are you... Do we have questions? We're still working on postcards. That's a pain. Anyway, I mean, we can catch up. We're all pretty swift learners here. So the first thing is, here's some postcards. Hopefully you got one of this Rad Desert Inn. That was one of my favorites. And this girl here, she was good too. So here's the thing. I think in entrepreneurship, there's really, I have, in my experience, been in one of two places. I've either had famine in my heart or in my eyes. And what I mean when I say that is, you know, these like these terrible pictures you see in war-torn places where people are in camps and the UN shows up with food and there's a picture of them. And we've all seen this picture and they're just reaching out just with desperation. And when I was minus $112,760, I had it in my heart. I thought, how will I ever go from here to anywhere but terrible, you know? I felt lack. I didn't have the money, I didn't have time, didn't have the reason. I didn't have any of that. And then one day I thought, is this my life? Am I continually going to be in lack, or am I not going to be in lack? And for me, that was a trigger. And it changed from that place of lack and like, I don't have, to a place where you could see it in my eyes. You know, when I went into meetings, it was a total different hunger. It wasn't from a place of desperation. It was from a place of possibility. And in all your businesses and whatever you're working on, there's a stark contrast between how you approach that thing, whether it's going in for financing, looking for a partner, writing your copy. If it's from a place of afraid, want, scarcity, there's a resonance with it and people can sense it. And really, I applied the same tactics to start my construction business the whole way through. And it wasn't until I looked at it as an opportunity as opposed to from a scarcity standpoint. And that was the first day I remember walking into the bank the first day that happened. And I got the money. And the difference was what they could see in my eyes. It was a very different frame. So if you want a happy ending, that depends, of course, on where you stop your story. So I had cancer a couple of years ago, and I openly talk about this. I have three children. My youngest is Sam. He's now two. When he was 2 months old, they diagnosed me with a super rare form of cervical cancer, which was so rare it was really interesting to the scientists. So my cells got to be sent all over the world because it was... doesn't respond to chemo, radiation, incurable. And so that was scary. And I spent, you know, some days on my kitchen floor rocking back and forth crying. And I, at this point, had built my business to be pretty big. Like, I think at that point, maybe that year, I did like 13 or 15 million or something. And I was so afraid of... The first person I called, of course, was my parents and my brother. And then I called my insurance company and I said, please tell me you've sold me some ridiculously expensive insurance that they cannot pull from me because, you know, and they said, we have sold you ridiculously expensive insurance. And I said, thank you. I can always trust you for that. And so, but because I was working on a financing deal and they were going to pull the financing if my life insurance didn't back it. And so beyond my parents and my brother and naturally my husband knew, he was there with me when I was diagnosed, but were the people who worked for and with me. And the people, you know, if you're building online communities or whatever it is you're building, that was the first place my head went to, is what's going to happen to them. And so my whole kind of, in a moment, I realized what it was. And some people who talked to the why before, like, why was I building all this thing? And at the beginning, it was because I was so in debt. And then it quickly transformed into something because I like to work with people and I like to build things and I like to create things. But in that one snippet of a moment, you know, my story was bad. And then I thought, do I tell the people who work for me? You know, they're all going to quit. I mean, who wants to work for a dying woman? That sounds like a bad idea, you know? So, but I did. I thought, look, these people have trusted their lives with me. Their kids' Christmas presents are based on the fact that I show up to work every day. And my, you know, livelihood is based on the fact that they do. So I'm in relationship with them ever as much as I am with my husband or anyone else. And that was such a liberating feeling that I showed up to work and I said, here's the story. And I was very truthful and I told them the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And I answered questions. I said, if anyone has a question, you don't have to ask me, you know, in front of everyone, but I will answer your question. And do you know that one single person quit? And actually, it was transformative. It was like the best team building exercise ever. Get cancer. It's good for your team. But it was fabulous because everyone just got so much more behind not only me, but the people who work with them, because it reframed going to work together. That we were all a part of something that was bigger than just each of us. And I think sometimes when you work in industries where you produce something, it's hard to get that sense of that you're bigger than something just than yourself. And I know that we all want to build that. Like the gals before me, they built a community that's bigger than just, you know, taking a recipe and having a green juice. It's part of something larger. And so, but these are the moments in our businesses where we have to look and say, you know, I know my story, but that's the first step, but the harder piece is often telling it. You know, it's telling it in a way that makes your community grow, stick by you, stand by you. And it's just about what part are you in your story, you know? Sometimes our stories look pretty bad. I've had some bad stories, man. And the next piece. So vulnerability is basically uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. Right? The intention and outcome of vulnerability is trust, intimacy, and connection. So I just came from Austin, Texas earlier this week. Woo! I love Austin, man. If you're from Austin, you are lucky. Let me tell you what. But I was doing a thing for, I was running a, so Dell Computers brings 200 entrepreneurs from around, women entrepreneurs from around the world together once a year, and they selected me, which was lovely. And then they asked me to run a thing on risk, which was awesome. And so then as a speaker, I got to meet Brené Brown, who was there to do. It was so amazing. Oh, my God. I took a selfie with her. I did. So, but this was the piece that was so interesting. And I think why she and I, like, we had a great connection and a really great conversation. Because, like, my whole thing is just this. Our capacity for vulnerability equals our ability for connection. And if you just think about that, like connecting with your audience, connecting with your customers, with your suppliers, with the people who work with and for you, that's the thing that has a not quit when you get terminal cancer. By the way, I'm healthy. Sorry, I always forget that part of the story. I'm healthy. Yeah. Thank you. Mostly, I just stayed very still, and the surgeon, you know, he did all the work. But so, basically, they took a whole bunch of my guts out. And I thought I would lose, like, 10 pounds, and it turns out all your girly parts only weigh, like, 3.5 pounds. Anyway, so I digress. So this is a piece, is that if you really want to connect with someone, you know, really and properly, it's about them connecting with you, you know? I'm connected to Michael Dell because I have his business card? No. Does Michael Dell know the first thing about me? No. And these are what we base so many of our connections on, whether it's like that business card piece or people that work with and for us or suppliers or whatever. It's really about them feeling connection to you. So how do they do that? They have to know you. How do you do that? Know your story. Tell it. And be vulnerable. And it's scary, and there are haters. And, you know, and I get emails that say whatever, you know, all these things, they come up, but in the proportion that you get lovers. It's like that's, I always know if people unsubscribe from my mailing list, I'm doing something right. Like, hey, I said something today. Like, one person, I always want one person to unsubscribe every time I send something. I do. That's my intention. I'm like, one person better unsubscribe. And, but for every one, you know, you get like a whole horde more because you're actually saying something. Anyway, so I didn't mean to say that, but I got off track. So this is a connection piece, right? So eventually everything connects. People, idea, objects. So connecting and creating relationships, that's what builds bridges. And I am a creator. That's ultimately what I am. I'm called a serial entrepreneur. Yesterday I was at Entrepreneur Magazine, and I'm really excited to share this. They have asked me to write for them, which was like, I wrote on my list, I am not leaving New York until I get to write for Entrepreneur Magazine. Yeah. So just, yeah, because I like, I've been the person who's afraid, and there aren't enough people who are successful who are willing to just be naked and say, here's the truth. And I wish there was someone like that when I was starting out, because there was so much vomiting into waste paper baskets for me. You know, that's like, that's what happens. My physiological state goes sideways. So this part about vulnerability and connection, I'll share with you something that my CV won't tell you, is that I am not very smart. And I failed, like, consistently. At high school, I failed French 11 twice. I failed, like, I don't know, calculus 3 times. I failed spelling in grade 6, which you actually, I have to send a shout out to Natalie, because I sent my slide deck in with spelling errors on it. And this morning I rushed in, I'm like, oh, I have spelling errors. She's like, no, I fixed them. I'm like, yes, that's why you're on the detail and I'm out here in orbit. So I negotiated my way into my undergraduate degree because I had terrible grades. And I thought, well, if I just show up there and ask for the registrar, then, and I didn't realize that's actually a panel of people. And so when you show up and ask for them, first thing, they know you're not that smart. And then what I did, I said, okay, look, if you let me in, I'll pay my whole year's tuition up front. And if I fail out, I fail out, you keep the money. It's all, we're a square. So they let me in. So that was amazing. And then I was on and off academic probation, like, you know, consistently on off. But then I graduated. It took a while, but I did get there. And then worked for a while. And then when I applied to MBA school, I applied in Canada, there are 13 MBA schools. I applied to all 13 of them. And I got 12 really skinny envelopes back from, like, even when the worst school. No, is anyone here from Saskatchewan? Yes? Sweet. Okay, Saskatchewan has the worst school. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. You. Okay, Moose Jaw is awesome, though. My best auntie, Barbie, who married a guy named Ken, is from Moose Jaw. I know. It's so crazy. Anyway, what was I talking? Oh, yeah, so Saskatchewan. So USASC has the worst MBA program in our nation, and I didn't get in there. And then there was only one left to come in, and that was Canada's number one MBA school, the Richard Ivey School of Business at Western Ontario. Plug. And that envelope came back, and it was fat. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm not even opening this. I'm going to drive to the bank and wire transfer this money right now. Because if they're business people and they get the money and then they realize they made a mistake, they'll probably still let me come. So I did. And so then what happened was I got into MBA school. I show up at MBA school thinking, like, oh, my God, I'm totally not going to fit in. And that was all fine. Didn't really matter. I've been doing that for a long time. And then I wound up meeting this woman. I used to be called Kelsey Kitch before I got married. Kelsey Kitch, I remember your application. It's like, you remember my... She said, yeah, it was on the top of the no pile when I walked into the admissions room. And it was so weird because it had this whole, like, drawing on the cover. And it was some molecular thing or something that I had to read it. And it was, tell us about you. And I had drawn this kind of, again, interstellar diagram from, like, universe to, like, woman and all that. It was weird, you know, but it was authentically me. And it was highly vulnerable. It was very truthful. It wasn't, I'm a well-rounded MBA candidate who will become a consultant and, you know, give you thousands and all that stuff. And she said, I said to the admissions committee, I think we should let this girl in off the wait list, and only if someone else doesn't take a position that they've been offered. She might do something one day. And that's how I got into MBA school. Crazy, hey? So crazy. And but it's so funny, but this is the whole thing. This is a notion, and even back to the first pictures I showed you, there's this perception we all have as successful businesses, or we visit people's websites and we think, oh my God, they're amazing, I could never, or someone else is doing this better, all these things that we do. And you don't know the story, right? You don't know that I have no right having an MBA, like none. But I did the like graduation address at the school this year. And, I said to all of them, look, at having a hammer does not make you a carpenter. So having an MBA doesn't make you a business person. Right. And I think there's this notion that we have to have those three letters to run businesses. We have to have a business degree. And I would actually argue you're probably further ahead not having it, because you're more likely to get something done. The business people were, like, caught up in, like, the Diamond E strategy model and all this. I mean, seriously, that's great. But running a business is a gut thing. It's a very personal thing. And so, again, if you're sitting in a chair somewhere in here thinking, I need to check a box, the only reason I got my MBA is because I knew I would need multi-million dollar financing and that some banker in Toronto would need to check a box that said I had it. That's it. Hard times arouse an instinctive desire for authenticity. You know, so this is the whole piece around being our authentic selves and what that means for our business and what that means for our connections and ultimately, and I'm getting to it, what it means for sales. So I will show you this picture because I've already showed you some ugly ones, but this one is a trumper. There. That's me in foils. And it is so funny because when I was working on my web copy, I sent this to the girl who does my website, and I'm like, I want this on my about page. She was like, you do not want this on your about page. This is a terrible idea. I'm like, no. Who thinks I'm actually blonde? Seriously? Did you walk in here thinking, this is my real hair, but this is not the color of my hair? And I thought, you know what? What better thing? Like, 90% of my list are women. You know, and there's kind of this whole piece about spending all this time, like, trying to be, like, the person on the cover of that magazine, which I'm not. And if ever anybody really met me, they'd think I was a fraud. Because they'd be like, well, you're not wearing, like, well, now I do wear heels, but at the time I didn't. But, you know, that's not the person. And so my whole thing is, like, if someone meets me in the flesh, I want them to go, yeah, that's her. That's the girl I know, you know. I know her. She's my friend. And the gals before I spoke to this is part about, like, creating the tribe of people who are like, I want to be friends with that girl. You know, and I might not even know her, but I feel like I know her. I feel something about her that I don't maybe even know about one of my besties. And so this, my website's being redone right now. But this will be on my website. And I know it's crappy, grainy, terrible, but this is true. So it's just true. And I'm okay with that. And if somebody doesn't like it, then they're probably not being honest that they totally have gray hair and they're covering it up, just like me. So this is a key piece about trust. So every single transaction, monetary, personal, whether you take a job, whether you hire someone, is based on this thing at the very bottom foundational core. So I sell, my contracts are based on lowest price, but the reason that I get them done on time and under budget is because I build trust everywhere that I go. And if I don't feel trust, I bail. I'm non-negotiable on that. And I think that, you know, I know there's some guys in the room and men have intuition and we have it too. Sometimes we're better at listening to it. Sometimes we're better at doubting it. And I think intuition piece is very important but the trust piece. So if you're wondering why it is you might not be making sales, do you trust the product you put out? Like, really, do you trust it? And if you don't, I'd encourage you to go back and give it another go. You know, it's not going to be perfect. Please never, never, never try and be perfect, because if you're being perfect, you spent too much time in the process and you're probably missing out on the notion that things are going to change and you have to be looking up. You know, if you're too busy looking at the details. I mean, starting my business took a tremendous amount of trust. I was a girl. I was 28 years old when I started my construction company. I was $112,760 in debt. And I went to the bank and I said, trust me, I will outwork anyone you know. I will do anything for this. Just trust. And they did. And I every other time before I went with all these spreadsheets, all this crazy, da, da, da. And probably they already knew because I'd been there 9 times that they were like, seriously, this woman will outwork anyone. She just does not go away. I'm like a bad smell or something. But that's the thing is, and I think sales, I mean, there's 1,000 different industries. There's 1,000 different ways to build your products. But the one thing that every single thing is sold on is trust. You can discount your prices, but are those the kind of people you want to be following you? You know, they're the least loyal clients. You want loyalty, trust, 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 trust all day. So this is the 5 ways to engage and sell. know and tell your story. You don't have to go out there and be like, you know, I've had three children and my boobs are saggy. Like, I'm not really, that is true, but that you don't have to go that far right out of the gate, you know, baby step it, but start telling a truthful story, something that's going to bring people to connect with you. Exposing your vulnerable self. Again, don't go whole hog, but like start somewhere and really do it. Giving, right? I would say selfless before selfish. Connecting. So, you know, you're in a room full of like-minded people. Connect with somebody, like one person that you're going to email when you get home. Say, hey, you got home okay? Awesome. I was thinking this thing about your business when I was on the plane. You never know, you know, what that could do. And then build trust. And it does take building. It starts with nothing. It's one little bit at a time. Don't ask for it whole hog, you know. You don't go on a date and say, hey, do you want to marry me? No, probably not. So this, okay, so here's the part. On your postcard. I think that's, yeah. I want you to write down whether or not your famine is coming from your heart or your eyes. I want you to write if you're going to choose comfort or courage, because you can only have one. If you're comfortable, you're probably not being too courageous. And if you're courageous, you're probably not feeling too comfortable. It's whatever you want, though. There is no right answer. Yes. I mean, do you feel afraid and in lack? You know, are you coming from that place when you're working on your business? Or are you coming from the place of I'm moving forward? Are you stuck in the famine and lack? Or are you in the place of like, I'm getting that? That's mine. Well, heart, well, your eyes is that you're getting it. Your heart is when you're stuck. And then the next thing I want you to write down are two actions that you're going to take in the next 3 weeks to change. I don't care what the change is, personal, professional, anything. It doesn't matter to me. Just two things. And then the last thing I want you to write down is how you're going to feel if you did those things. One or two words, feelings, not measurables. Like I'm going to have 1,000 people on my list. I don't want to hear any of that. I want to hear, I feel proud. I feel accomplished. I feel loved. I feel, I don't know, appreciated. I feel connected. Some words. And the other positive thing is I really don't know, although there are some awesome ladies here who've done surveys for me, I don't really know any of you. And so I won't, you know, I'm not like reading these to edit anything. I'll tell you what I'm going to do with them. I'm going to take them all. For those of you who feel comfortable sharing, right? Because you can take this home in your pocket if you want. You can share it with me. I'm going to read it and I'm going to put a little something on it. I'm going to send it back to you. In 3 weeks, I'm going to put it in the mail. And then you'll get it. And no one will understand. Your postman will have no idea what this gobbledygook is about. That's why it's a bit cryptic. And it's just a message from you to yourself and from me to you. So that there's a bit of a follow-up, you know. Because we can leave these things all pumped up and full of jazz. And then, you know, Monday is awesome. Tuesday's pretty good. Wednesday's like, damn it. You know? I do it, like, guilty. That's why I do this when I do, like, intimate engagements like this. I think we all kind of need to be accountable to ourselves first, but sometimes it helps when someone else has a little something to help us along. So that's what this is being used for. So the last thing, this is my whole outlook on life, is opportunity is equal to possibility and change. Just has to be possible, and you have to make a change. You know, if we want something else, and the reason that everyone is here today is because you want something else, different, more, less, I don't know. You're seeking, you know. our first child, her initials are S-E-K-R, and we made that for a reason. You know, there's always something. There's an opportunity. But the change is a really important part, and that's the most courageous thing I think you could do. So with that, I thank you for possibly connecting with me, and I look forward to whoever I can connect with out there today. And I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank Nathalie for having me. It's been awesome and so many great people to meet, and I want you all to give yourselves, not me, a proper round of applause for being truthful. I'm just going to linger until you come over. Oh, what? Questions. Oh, okay, questions. Awesome. Oh, hey, it's sweet. So I love geometrics, and they haven't been in, and so I've been out of style for a long time. I got it. I'm from Canada, so I got it. Someone that read the tag. I don't know what. Do we read this? There's a brand on it. I don't know what it is. Sorry, I know there's a lot of hair.
Clover. Canyon.
Clover Canyon. That's. Is it all bad? It's stuck up? Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, no, I haven't. Well, this is 3 days in, this hair. I'll be honest about that. Hi. Mm-hmm. So my family had a construction business growing up, and then my parents left the country in 97. Not like fleeing or anything. They stay out of jail, Kelsey. No, they were taxes, you know, they were done with paying taxes. So they moved to the Caribbean and so then when I finished my MBA, I went consulting for 6 months and I couldn't breathe in there. It wasn't for me. So I relate to the people who are in jobs who just, there's something else, you know, there's something. And so anyway, so I thought, what do I know how to do? Well, the only thing I know how to do is build roads. So I guess I should go and do that. You know, there's kind of this, there's a conversation around passion and purpose, which I think is, and gift, which I think is interesting and maybe not a totally politically correct thing. Nathalie's like, oh, what are you going to say? But my passion is music. Like, I am so, I book gigs based on who's in town in that city sometimes. It's not even about, I'm like, oh, Hosier is in Vancouver on October 20th. I'm going to book a gig there so I can go. So, but my gift is I'm great at connecting with people and doing math. You know, math. It's like the lamest thing to be good at. But it's great in construction. I mean, it's fabulous in construction. So I guess, you know, that's how I got into it. It was kind of a random thing of being exposed to an industry and knowing, you know, working. And then I happened to be good at math. And then the reason I ever made any money at it or built it as big as I did was because of making connections, not because I'm clever, you know. I often say I've got a criminal mind. But I see opportunity, you know. It's just like that's possible. It's the possibility mindset. Actually, that's an awesome book. If you could read The Art of Possibility. Isn't it amazing? It's got a yellow cover. I don't know who writes it. Go into the bookstore. It's got a yellow cover. I'm sure that'll... But you Google it, the almighty Google. That may be right. Yeah, it's a wonderful for people who aren't maybe in that frame of mind. What am I doing now? So now I just came from Dell. I was at the Global Entrepreneurship Congress in Moscow. Before that, I travel the world doing this and have a website, and I am working on some books and a program for people who are like me, what I call corporates and creatives. You know, who are going to work and can't breathe in there anymore, who need some help and some structure and some real, the honest stuff and the deliverable stuff you can actually make change on, not like just fluffy puff, you know? So that's what I'm working on. I'm super excited about it. I think something I'll mention on the side. I hired a girl who is like amazing and smart into what the other girl said about hiring. I think it was Dan or Ben. If you can find someone like that, like oh boy, it's totally changed my world. So changed my world. It's been the best thing for me. So yeah, that's what I'm working on. Yeah, great. My husband is awesome. I dated every bad guy, and then I dated him. And I went to MBA school with this whole thing. I was like, no men. It was actually on a list. Three things. Focus, no more men, and I think maybe study. And he found it, like, on our second date. He's like, what's this? I'm like, just a list from before and another time of a friend's, you know? Anyway, yeah, I know my husband is awesome. Yeah, it's a juggle, you know? I don't talk to my kids when I'm away because it's too... I leave them a note and a little in a little brown paper bag for every day that I'm away, and a little for each of them, and a little something in it. Whether like Graham, it's like a little dinosaur. Hey, buddy, whatever, you know. So they're connected to me, but it's too destructive. Andrew has to deal with a lot of crying if, you know, we get on the phone, and then I also feel tremendous guilt and self-loathing, so I don't call them. What's the most lethal trait you see in entrepreneurs that make them not move forward with their dreams? Yeah, or success? Yeah. From my perspective, it's generally ego and judgment, or in the same tone. So, what often that means is they don't do anything. Right? They like get really stuck in this place of I want to, it's ready, but it's not ready, I'm not sure, and they don't ask. So they, you know, like, I am the first person to say, I do not know what I'm doing. Like, that is, and that's a tremendous way to build trust, actually. Like, I've gone into the bank, which is where no one goes to say, I don't know what I'm doing, you know? And I've said, look, I don't know. I've got into this situation. I have to produce these financial statements. I don't know what they're asking for. Do you have someone in the bank who can help me? Because my accountant is in Maui and I'm just seriously freaking out right now. And they're like, yeah, we do have someone who understands, you know? So just ask and just, hopefully you're not good at everything, you know? That's the other thing. We all try and be good at everything a little bit, and like this old jack of all trades story, right? And then we try and make things perfect. And I think if it's perfect, it's probably going to fail because it hasn't adapted yet. You spent so much time perfecting it and the market moved. Ask your market. We just did 70 like human voice interviews. I talked to 70 people for like 30 minutes apiece. What is happening for you? How are you doing? What are we talking about? What is it about me that makes you interested in what I have to say? I thought it would be press and like awards and amazing, awesome sauce worldliness. And it's not that at all. It's like, it's the stuff I talked about today. It's about being raw and truthful and real, and the accolades all help, you know, that's like it. But I think oftentimes it's our ego because we don't want to ask. And it's our judgment around whether or not something's good enough. Those are the two lethal things, I'd say. Last question. Just holler at me. Right, so that probably is like, so can I be like super candid? Okay, awesome. So that probably, it's a fear thing probably, because I've done this. So me in construction. So I go into like a boardroom of 10 men and they're waiting for the boss to show up and asking me to get them coffee. Classic, all the time. It's so much fun to be like, no, I'm here. Hi, let's go. Let's go, boys. But what it really, it's for me, it really was a fear thing. So in that world, in the world of the suits and the MBA stuff and all that stuff, vulnerability is something, like their level of vulnerability is their tolerance is so low, right? That you really have to reframe your standards to that, like being vulnerable with them, again, baby steps, is like saying that you can't book a meeting after 3 p.m. because you have to pick up your child. Like that's where it starts with those people. In my experience is like, You have to meet them where they are. To them, that's like, wow, she's okay. This is something human. I will, after they're in bed at 8 o'clock, I'll work until 2 in the morning for you and whatever it is that you want. But today, I have to leave at 3. It's allowing them those small moments into your life where you are a person and you're not just like part of their spreadsheet. You know, you're not feeding into the algorithm. But you have to meet them where they are. Like, so with your health clients, like, they're there already. You can just show right up. Yeah. But a lot of that's fear, because that's a super, that environment's not familiar with that stuff, right? And sometimes it's not acceptable, you know? Right. You build trust by delivering results. The buttoned-up stuff is a game, right? That's the package. You have to get to that point. Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. And that's part of the game, too. I mean, it's terrible to admit, I play in a men's game. So I show up and I do my thing. I deliver my results. But then part of it is I'm playing in it. So what's my strategy? You know, I think we kind of, and again, maybe this isn't totally, but there's like the old boys club exists, and that's fine. That's the game. So we can resent it, which is fine, too. Or we can play it, which is what we're doing. You have to be strategic about it, which is the criminal. You know, but that's how you get to a place where you can then go into the and make change. That's when you get onto boards. That's when you do all those things. Those women who came before us, who got us these places, they played it strategically. You can't go in and meet them where they're not, you know. So I don't know if that answers your question, but anyway. Thank you very much.